Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Into the Darkness, where dark ink becomes an odyssey of the imagination told in crashing waves of turmoil as emotions are awakened and set to canvas in haunting fashion. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our dark poetry night, so if you find that that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, if you get a chance, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets. Because when you purchase them, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, well, you know, I have to say, life is good. Looking forward to hanging out with you, delving into the dark poetry. Maybe there'll be another cool poet or two will show up. The temperatures have been beautiful. The highest it's been is in the 70s. This morning I went for a walk and it was 65 degrees, but the sun was shining. And, you know, this has been my thing lately. I've been going for morning walks and just really enjoying myself. So, you know, that's a little tidbit of what's up with my life. Nothing exciting, as we all know, never is. And so, what's up with you?
Same old, same old. Nothing going on.
Yeah. Haven't really been doing any gardening or reading or anything.
Well, pick up sticks from the last big blow we had through here.
That'll make a mess, that's for sure. That's a lot of a cleaning up to do. But instead of promoting it at the end of the show before we run out of time, why don't you bring up your Sunday show? What you got going on?
Moving in stereo, music from the cars, something a little bit different than something that hit the late 70s with a different tone.
That was very cool. I like that. Yeah, they did have a more upbeat feel. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that show, along with many others. And, so tonight's theme is Swarm of Locusts. And actually, Naomi Sarah was nice enough to run a contest, because at the time that I wanted to get this contest started, I actually didn't have any internet. Thank goodness it got back to working. So I asked her to run this contest, and I said, you know, just put up some pictures. I said, you know, I want the main theme to be Swarm of Locusts, and that people can either write to the word swarm or write to the word locust, or, you know, provide like three or four pictures. And she really did a great job. Because she didn't just put up 3 or 4 pictures. She put up quotes. She put up a few pictures. Really a lot of stuff for people to delve into. Lots of great inspiration there. And, of course, I told her, make sure to let everybody know that it doesn't have to be literally about, locusts, although that's fine. But they're free to take it on a metaphorical level. So definitely a great contest that Naomi ran, and I'm very grateful to her for that. All right. Now, let's see who we have here. All right. Hello, area code 760. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, Pam. It's Scott.
Oh, Scott. You know, eventually I'll come to recognize your number, but it might take a while. 760, Scott. I have to start meeting that.
Yeah,
but
I don't
it's good
to
hear
enough.
From you. It's good
yeah,
to hear from you. Andy, how are you doing?
Not much, just sitting here. I was listening to that rocking out song, thinking back to the days when I was long on hair and short on brains, and now I'm short on both of them.
Oh, my God. Yep. Good old Megadeth.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they definitely know how to do it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, when it comes to the heavy metal, the screams, the, you know, the, oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm sure he's made his throat bleed more than once. Okay. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get the ball rolling. And Rex, what do you have for us first?
Well, Keith, maybe when we're all deceased. By dark and joy. A tiny seed is planted, watered down with lies, fertilized with bullshit, sudden hysterical outcries. There's a horde of refugees at the border, moving in a few soldiers of massive lies. Suddenly, they're a drug caravan. A teenage boy is shot and killed, just what was his thing. Police didn't trust the gun was safe. Because of the color of his skin. Now it's Black Lives Matter and vigilantes with their guns who feel they're vindicated when what their fears blood runs. As long as things remain like this, we'll never have world peace. But despite a subtle white lie, we'll make a folded crease. And in that crease, hysteria like bacteria bees. A need for a feeling of security make dinner for thoughts to feed. Those thoughts run rampant like a lit fuse through our minds, and once it has exploded, a mushroom cloud is left behind. And pump.
Great read there, Rex. And oh my gosh, what a poem that hits hard. She wrote to the prompt, the quote, disease-carrying thoughts swarm and multiply in the dark and twisted labyrinths of our minds. And in that is needed is a mob and a good political slogan for the epidemic to be spread once again with a burst of automatic weapons or a mushroom cloud. And I have to say, I think she captured that wonderfully, and I'll definitely be saying more, but first I'm going to get up your guys' thoughts. So, Scott, let's start with you.
This is a interesting write. I love it, though. It's got some really good twists to it. I really like this second stanza where it's talking about there's a horde of refugees at the border needing in a few photos and massive lies. Suddenly, they're a drug caravan. I mean, that's just really powerful right there. And it continues on with lots of little twists as far as the way people view things, and right on down to the end where it does hit on the idea of the mushroom cloud and stuff, which I'm going to imagine if that ever happens, it will come through deception of some sort in our world. So very powerful right there by Darkened Auras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that you brought up that end with the mushroom cloud, you know, because in all honesty, I think one of the reasons that we haven't had an all-out World War III, and I'm no professional, obviously, just my opinion, is that there are so many, like, atomic weapons that could bomb throughout the world that we would basically just destroy the world. And I think that's part of what kind of keeps that from happening is, you know, there's certain people that, you know, they prefer not to push the button. But yeah, that was a what's that?
I was going to say, and then, you know, the idea that freedom of speech helps prevent a lot of really bad things from happening. And I think in a number of ways throughout this poem, that's what's being touched on, you know, because, you know, you have what, the third to last stanza we're talking about, because the slightest little white lie will make a full decrease, and, you know, all that stuff talking about, as long as things remain like this, we'll never have world peace. It's the slightest little white lie will make a full decrease. And so, you know, thematically speaking, it seems as if he or she is touching on the idea that, you know, deception oftentimes is the way to cause these things to happen. So it's a really well-written poem.
It really is. It really is. I like that thought. Very cool there. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I can buy them what Scott was saying, but the biggest thing that I can hang my hat on with this thing is never let a crisis go to waste. And by that, because of the language he's used, and that which has been driven with the thoughts of the tiny seed, the horde of refugees, for one thing, the teenage boy. Everything has a purpose. I mean, the papers and the politicians all have their angled singularity of narrative to point to. And all of a sudden, it is not what it was originally when it started out with. The fact that we have another caravan on the way up here through Mexico, not a big deal until they get here. That doesn't belie the fact that the 4 million people that have already been coming across the border in the past 18 months, nor of what the hell are we going to do with it, considering we got shortages in food, we got shortages in gas, prices are going outside the roof, and you know what? We're not going to be able to feed ourselves, let alone another horde of more people coming in that want something better for themselves than they got in their own countries. Yet, nothing gets done. It's just another photo op, another thing. Oh, we have to do this. We have to. If we have to do this, who's paying for it? Unfortunately, we poor bastards are paying for it all. It doesn't matter what it is, from one city burning down to the security that they keep claiming that we need. Yet, in order to have that security, they need to keep taking our rights away from us. There's a whole lot that runs with it. Like I said, never let a crisis go to waste.
That might actually, Rex, be a really good title for the poem, since the poet himself or herself, not sure which one we have here, seems to be debating amongst or to themselves whether this is their title they want to stick with. So.
Yeah, that would, and actually, Rex, that would be a good title for a poem. Heck, you know, you could write a poem based on that title.
Well,
if I
do, it'll be in the tarantula. So,
there you go.
I've got a few of those that I need to pop into, but I haven't quite mapped out their origins and their roles yet.
Mm. Yeah. But, Scott, Rex has a few different series that he does, but one of them that you might particularly like is his, if you go to his page sometime, you can check out his Tarantula series, which has some of the most hard-hitting rights on social commentary that you will ever read. And, of course, in wonderful language. I highly recommend them.
Yeah, I probably would like that quite a bit, I'm sure.
Oh, I think so, yeah. But great comments and wonderful comment, Rex, on the whole, we pay desperately for things and prices are just, it's skyrocketing. It's horrible. What I like is that she gives several different examples. First of all, as always, Dark and Doris is a wonderful rhyming poet. Great choice of words and phrases. Straightforward language, wonderful examples. I like that the title is, World Peace with a Question. And the idea that there, you can't just point one finger at one particular group or one particular party. There are so many examples of throughout the world of, violence happening and, vigilantes with guns on both sides. I like the mention of hysteria. Hysteria, like bacteria breed. That line there touches really well on the whole idea of the mob mentality that happens. So excellent right here and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Gleditsi by A. Diltz, 7881. That was yours.
Okie dokie. Gleditsi by A. Diltz, 7881. And the sky opens up with noise. I flew beyond the sun like it was still night. On the edge of me, the voices still whisper, tearing paper wings with piercing tongues. Throw me away into oblivion. Thousands of bodies lift me up, screaming locusts, decimate, devour what's left of what was. Leaving you behind on a love song, take and take, eat your lonely away, watching out the hollow window. The measure of destruction can't be unseen. Dust chokes you like fingers in your mouth. My destruction is done in love for you. A waking opera of beating wings sings your desultory epilogue and poem. And Gleditsi is Latin for locust. Now that's really cool to know. I'm really wonderful right here. And Rex, I'd like to start with your thoughts.
Oh, there's something biblical in this one. The idea of, at least where it hits her, a thousand bodies lift me up, screaming locusts decimate, devour what's left, what was. It's that idea of the calling, the great rapture. And then leaving you behind on a love song, take and take, eat your lonely way, watching out the hollow window. The measure of destruction can't be unseen. Hollow window, kind of a lonely view to that which you see from afar. And the back end of this, it's on the note of greed is the actual ending thought, whether it's with locusts or whether it's because the people are just greedy, miserable things when it comes to most of life. They'll take and take and take, and it is a matter of course. The idea, I guess, is, hey, some will pass on while the others are going to just be part of that gustatory epilogue, the meal for the locust.
I like that. I like that. And you're right. People can be and are extremely greedy. One of the reasons, and it doesn't surprise me this has a biblical feel to it, and you're right about that. I mean, one of the 12 plagues was, I think it was 12. I'm getting my numbers mixed up. But in the Bible was the plague of locusts. There's such a great representation of greed. They just don't think about anything or anyone other than swarming together and, completely obliterating things. as you were talking, as you were getting near the end of your comment, and I was listening, and one of the, what you said kind of made me think of, and I didn't know if you meant it this way, but it made me think of the big biblical interpretation of the end days, where, you know, some people will be lifted up and carried away. And of course, everybody has different interpretations of the Bible and in the end times, especially in the book of Revelation. But, you know, the idea being that, as you were mentioning, some people are taken away and some people are left behind. And I thought that, as you said that, I was looking at the second to last stanza and thinking, you know, that actually quite reflects that quite well. But it could also be a metaphor for, you know, simply almost like being carried away metaphorically, like walking away. I really like throw me away into oblivion, thousands of eyes lift me up, screaming locusts decimate, devour what's left of what was. There's some really strong lines there in the idea that people just aren't happy unless everything is taken, you know. And I really like the use of the word gustatory, gustatory epilogue. That was a wonderful phrasing. So great comment there, Rex, and wonderful write by Adil. And Scott, your thoughts on this poem?
This is really deep, powerful, and it's just got a lot of really good lines. I agree on that second stanza. That's pretty amazing. You know, I questioned, you know, if this can't be taken two different ways, both in the religious sense and stuff, but it definitely has this hollow, lonely feel, and it at one point begins to talk in the second person or directly to someone, leaving you behind on a love song. Take and take and eat your lonely away. So, you know, it does kind of, you know, have a feel that, you know, it could be like a relationship and everything, and that the storm of locusts is sort of eating away at what was from the previous stanza. So I think you might be able to take it in multiple ways, but I think any way you choose to take it, it's really powerful, because I agree. I love the ending of it as well. A waking opera of beating wings sings your gustatory epilogue. Just a very powerful piece altogether. So
it is. And I do like that you brought that it can be taken in multiple ways, because I have to agree. So excellent comment there. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Let's see. We got Not So Fun in Kansas by Sam Sampson. And Scott, could you read that for us, please?
Sure. Not So Fun in Kansas by Sam Sampson. Not So Fun in Kansas. What the hell? Splat, splatty, splat, and a million more. Total guts out. Can't see a thing. After a wiper smear, quick pull to the side of the road, damn near killed me. Highway 70, just out of Salina. Kansas State bird attack. Locust swarm. What a nightmare. Waiting, waiting. 20 minutes later, the swarm passes. Gonna be a long evening of power washing. And poem.
Great read there, Scott. A fun little brevity from Sam Sampson. You know, he goes into the very every, not every day, but you know, the literal darkness of actually dealing with swarms of locusts. I have never actually seen a swarm of locusts in real life. I can imagine that it's kind of like not being able, it's like a bad snowstorm. I know that's the only comparison I have, you know, like up here in Wisconsin, you get those snowstorms, and sometimes you just have to pull the side road, or you already know not to even leave your house. And so I can picture you know, not being able to see, like the same as a snowstorm, but it's the splatting and the, you know, the smear. And I like that he used the word splat, the onomatopoeia, and that the mention of, you know, the how visceral the idea of the wipers smearing the bodies of these locusts. You know, so I he brings us into the reality of people who live in areas where these insects swarm and take over the sky, take over crops. You know, he really brings us into that reality. So, and definitely clever, and you know, I think it's got a nice kind of pinch of dark humor. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's a triple story, the sarcasm, the irony, and there is humor in this. The opening up, the splat, splatity, splat, there's that little bit of shock value to open up and total guts out, easy on there. And the thing of the wiper smear, and then the reality, damn, almost killed me. Because when you get run into a storm like that, you don't see anything, even when it's coming at you. It's just a huge millstone around your neck, so to speak, in the moment. And then the thought of sitting on the side of the road waiting for it all to go by. And then the offhand remark of going to be a long evening of power washing. But then again, that doesn't belie the fact that not so fun in Kansas. This is the wheat and corn basket of the country. So there's the third angle of decimation of crops, which he hasn't alluded to, is there nonetheless.
I like that. I like that you mentioned that this brevity can be broken down into three parts. And, you know, you really brought in, you know, the darkness with the idea of how dangerous it can be. And not only how dangerous it can be, but the idea that people's sources of income can be completely destroyed. So, you know, really great comment there, Rex. Thank you. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one gave me three thoughts as well. One, it reminded me of a poem I wrote called Something's Been Bugging Me Lately. But my poem is a double entendre on a relationship of a bug hitting a windshield. And the people inside the thing making light of it. Inside the car. So kind of like in a relationship getting hit by the car, basically. So anyways, yeah, that kind of brought that memory back to me because it's very much so like that. Also kind of like the idea of another thing it brought to mind for me was the Kansas State bird attack, meaning that these locusts are the Kansas State bird. And being raised in Colorado, we used to always say that the state tree of Kansas was the telephone pole. So that kind of brought that memory back for me. But overall, though, this poem is really cool. I do like it. It brought a smile to my face right from the beginning. And it was definitely very enjoyable for me to read. And I forget what my third one was, I was going to say, but can't be that important as I'm forgetting it. So, but
yeah, it'll come
good
to
job.
You 4 in the morning. Yep. But, I like that you brought up the the Kansas State bird because, yeah, that makes me think of how, like, they call the mosquito the Minnesota State bird or the Wisconsin State bird. So, great observations there. And, all right, what do you got for us next, Rex?
Good
question.
They shall bring down hellfire by R. Byron. They shall bring down hellfire, clutching their vest of lies. No king, no sire shall escape their fiery dart of fire. In darkness rides at night. None shall see putrid faces. By fist this world shall go, shall molest with every hand on this globe, bowing like dominoes, men fall. A dungeon. wound, shape sword to cut shield for blow, ghost speak with coldness, pouring in dying cities, called forth by breathing fire, upon a sweet tongue savoring, dungeon drawing omen. Sons of blind bachelors, groans of soiled blood, fugitives in a fallen land, slaying with broken breath, dungeon spear traded for matching spurs, pincer grasp of empty homes, like floating cargo upon a river, and spinning wheels of coaches to crack in wall and tomb. A shadowy sleep as grown men weep, ciphers peek through chalice doors, serving the arm of iniquity, laying bruised crosses on forehead, rivers buried deep watery eyes, aged bottles of red wine poured, sacrifice and nuns of Arta, pointing to an asylum, a battleground of ruin. Ambushed by yesterday's, burning a candle's last wick, from darker pastures of locusts, as abandoned ships into the drifting sea, footprints mar the glow in desert swarms, snake tongue with sprinkles of gold dust, shipwrecks emboldened winds, sinks crumbling on the shore.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I have to say, I really, really appreciate and enjoy R. Byron's use of metaphors and imagery, but sometimes her poetry just, or his, makes my brain like spin around in a circle, like a dog trying to make its bed, because oh my goodness. So I think, Scott, I'm going to have you delve into this one first and share your thoughts with us.
All right. Yeah, this is, I really like this quite a bit, too. Got quite a few really great images throughout it. Just starting right off the beginning of it, they shall bring down hellfire, clutching their vest of lies. No king, no sire shall escape their fiery dart of fire. And darkness rides at night, none shall see putrid faces by fists. This world shall go, shall molest with every hand on this globe, bowing like dominoes, men fall. That's just, that's a great stanza. I really like it. Like I say, it just creates images in my head all the way through it. And so very powerful writing and just continues on throughout it.
Uh-oh. Got dropped in the middle of a comment. Oh, dear. All right. Well, Rex, you did a wonderful read of that, and I'd like to hear your thoughts.
All the opening stanza is easy. It hits on that note of no king, no sire shall escape their fiery dart of fire. It's the sort of the coming of that beast and how it walks across the landscape, keeping everything in sight until it has had their season and then wakes again until it rises once more. It's on the notion of on this globe bowing like dominoes and fall. Again, a dungeon fish, a wound, a ghost speak of coldness pouring in dying city. There's that notion of what you're sitting on is the four horsemen angle, except you kind of hit on a couple of sorts. Famine and death walk within this one. And you could also hit on disease walking as well, because once you hit famine, disease follows, and death hits on both notes. And it will come to everyone, not just a singularity. Try to speak to child's source, serving the arm of iniquity, laying bruised cross on forehead. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're rich, powerful, or whether you're just a lowly serf. It does not matter. The battleground of ruin is this last stanza. The locust abandoned ships in the drifting seas against death. Footprints mar the glow of desert swarms. Snake tongue with sprinkles of gold dust. The effects of boulder wind. Things coming on the shore like hidden assassins and party classes. There's the idea that, hey, they come when they come and they leave destruction in their wake, as well as disease and famine, because there's nothing left to eat because they gorge themselves until the next time around.
There definitely is a feeling of the next time around, like that it's not going to stop. One of the things that I particularly like about this, I mean, it's got powerful dark imagery. I like the line, "Shall molest with every hand on the globe, bowing like dominoes men fell." And I know that you mentioned before, but I think, you know, the idea there being that we need to be careful about to who or what we bow to, because we'll end up falling. I also like the where it says, "Sons of blind bachelors, groans of soiled blood." It feels like that this touches on the idea of generations, generations suffering, of shadowy sleep as grown men weep, ciphers peek through shallows, doors serving the arm of iniquity, laying bruised crosses on foreheads, rivers buried deep, watery eyes. There's such a thing, like it feels like tears and blood, ambushed by yesterday, being a candle's last wick from darker pastures of locusts. It really does, it has a feeling of to me, of years passing and the consequences, you know, the consequences of violence, the consequences of greed and destruction. So just a powerful write and very well done. And welcome back, Scott. Glad you could join us again.
I didn't even know I was sitting there for a few talking to myself, I imagine.
We've all been there.
All right, well, yeah, good to have you back. I think that's all that happened to all of us. But we did get, I think, a majority of your comments. So, all right. And what do we got next, Rex?
"Cold" by Naomi Sarah. That one's yours.
All right. "Swarms of locusts feast on my every cell, with claws and icy teeth that bite into, rip, and shred my brain into thin tin slits. Their putrid breath secreting an unbreakable, tenebrous pulsation, cold as steel, cutting through my aching bloodstream, birthing iron spikes that pierce my mind, nailing me down inside this chilling hour, forever clutched in the fangs of a black coal night. Each grain of my earth buried under a desert, where every road leads to a hardened fist, and I stare from holes of rusted dust as faded words leak from my barbed-wire-stitched lips, burning my mouth with an acidic taste. As my body turns into a metallic powder, each particle a howl and echo, twisting, turning, tossing, disintegrating in the wind. What few remains fallen, scattered upon an arid soil to be crushed into clay, buried under a cement crust where no light filters in and only coldness exists." And poem. I have to say that she has some wonderful phrasing in there. So definite, like, alliteration, or I don't know if it's alliteration exactly, but a bit of tongue twisters. And she wrote to the prompt, "Cold hopes swarm like worms within our living clay." And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, this bites on the notion of that which takes from within. You could walk on, since the every cell cancer, putrid breath secreting an unbreakable tenebrous pulsation, my heating bloodstream birthing iron spikes, that pierced my mind. Now, the mind angle, you could walk into any number of thoughts, Alzheimer's. You could hit onto the fact that BHP, bovine, bovine encephalitis, bovine spongiform encephalitis. There it is. Mad cow disease is the sort of getting bit by a rabid animal that works with this same angle. But either way, it's the it's being eaten from the inside out. As my body turned to a metallic powder, each particle howling echo. There's that notation being reduced to basic elements, calcium, the zinc, the carbon, the gold, and everything else that is within our system that is worth anything. That is, boil this down into that moment where it gets spread upon an arid soil, be crushed into clay. So there's that notion of being almost renewed, yet the coldness at the bottom end of this kind of hits on a hopeless angle. So it hits on the idea of being supremely sad, melancholy, or even walking the edge of life itself.
That is a really great comment. Of course, that doesn't surprise me too much, but because I can definitely see that. You know, I did catch in the sadness in it. The idea of, I felt like there was an idea of depression. But when you mentioned the thought of the body destroying itself, the body ripping itself apart, and cancer or other diseases that destroy the body, destroy the cells, really great observation there, Rex. Definitely made me see the poem in a different way. And before we continue on with, and that's a great thing. And before I continue on with your comment, Scott, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Dude onto the show. So welcome, Dude. Glad you could join us.
Hello. Yeah, happy to be here.
Wonderful.
Good evening.
And how are you doing?
I'm excellent.
Good, good. Glad to hear that. And all right, and Scott, your thoughts on Naomi's poem.
You know, reading it in light of what Rex said, I can see very much so it being some sort of an ailment eating the body, the mind, etc. Right from that very first stanza being the locust swarm kind of carrying it to the mind. And then, you know, that metallic taste thing toward the end of the poem as well, as my body turns into a metallic powder, each particle a howling echo, twisting, turning, tossing, disintegrating into the wind or in the wind. It's a really well-written, powerful poem. And as you read it and everything, I was saying, wow, you know, this is really strongly written, the vocabulary is very powerful and everything, and then right there in the middle of the thing, the black hole night, kind of, as Rex was, I think, alluding to, was the idea of that being death, and kind of returning to the earth in that stanza, I think, to some degree as well. So, yeah, that's a really powerful poem. Well done, Naomi.
Absolutely. I really like, great comment there, Scott. Yeah, I really like that she went and took the swarms of locusts as a metaphor for the inside of the body and the mind being destroyed. And I really did feel like to be crushed into clay was that whole idea of ashes to ashes and dust to dust, to return back to the earth. And I really liked, and I stare from holes of rusted dust as faded words leak from my barbed wire stitch lips, burning my mouth in an acidic taste. It really touches really well on that idea of no longer being able to recognize your own mind, your own body. So beautifully and haunting light and very well done. And Dude, did you get a chance to read Naomi's poem, Cold?
No, I did not. But
that's okay. I'll catch you on the next round.
Yeah, catch me on the next one.
All right. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Locust by Scott Sharp.
All right. I shall read this for you. Locust. I live on the edge of the locust swarm. Black rain fills the skies in my life. Like vegetation, I stand wind wavering, vulnerable as the night to morning. Under the sweltering power of the angry sun, society beats down on me through greenhouse eyes, offering me but drops of water from a gerbil bottle. Caged, I wait to be devoured by the relentless society of locusts. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. I'm really glad that you're able to call in. You know, I've noticed lately you seem to be experimenting more with brevity. I think that's really cool. I think it's important for us to always experiment when possible with different styles. I like this all the way through, but I live on the edge of the locust swarm. You know, I thought that was the interesting thought of the idea that I can't fully escape this society, this greed of society, but I'm not going to be part of it. But by, you know, it's like that whole idea of, to me anyways, is when you stand alone, you become vulnerable. But if you decide to, you know, go in with the vultures and the snakes and, you know, all those that will, and the scorpions and all those that will turn on you. I have to say, you know, this is great imagery all the way through, but my favorite is greenhouse eyes. Society beats down on me through greenhouse eyes. You know, there's something that it feels like being trapped in an artificial environment. And of course, the mention of a gerbil bottle. I think, you know, sometimes I think the best metaphors are the simplest ones, because as soon as you say offering me but drops of water from a gerbil bottle, not just drops of water, but from a gerbil bottle, I mean, you just instantly picture someone who's never going anywhere, who's, you know, the only time they're moving is when they're running in circles on that metal wheel. So a great brevity on the whole idea of society destroying the individuality. So excellent write and very well done.
Thanks.
And Rex, your thoughts?
All right, Scott, I like this for the full metaphor angle you went with it. I live on the edge of the locust swarm to start with, and then you finish out with by the relentless society of locusts. But in between, you drop nice little touches of thought. Black rain fills the sky in my life. Let's see. I stand wind wavering, vulnerable as the night to morning, unsweltering power of the angry sun, with the greenhouse eyes, offering the drips of water from a double bottle cage. I wait to be devoured. There is such an easy thought with this as far as how you're looking at that. The greenhouse eyes, I see that as social media staring with the lens down at you. The drops of water, if you're a good boy, you might get a drop or two here or there. But still, you're in that cage of where if you say the wrong thing, you get the shit torn out of you. And you get it done by people who have no real identity, no actually constructed thought to you other than they own the moment within that sphere where you are the small end and they are the big end, even though they are the smallest part of that sphere itself. It doesn't matter because they're being propped up by other entities which want them to rant and rave and let loose pure hideous crap. So the idea, I wait to be devoured by the endless Relentless Society of Locust is, yeah, where next do they go? Just because this is good today, if I say it tomorrow, will they chew me up then? Or is it next week? Or will what I say in future be something that was bad past, but now is good in the future? But there's no real way out except for the fact that you got to watch everything you do, say, and you got to watch your step, which is kind of a hard thing because, you know what, we're supposed to be able to communicate, but if you can't communicate because you're being put down, then there's no reality to communication to begin with, except for the singularity. And that singularity needs to be squashed.
Great thoughts, Jim Durex.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
And dude, your thoughts?
I thought this was a great piece. I really liked the brevity, and I liked the way that it showed like the loss of identity in a very visceral way. The great imagery throughout really underscored that, and I really liked the way that it flows. There's just like this apocalyptic feel to it, and there's like this sense of decay that weeds throughout, and there's just like this feeling of like hopelessness that you get when you read this, and I can really feel like there's this sense of there. I really like how the last word is locust, and that corresponds with the title of the piece. And I feel like that really rounds it off really well. So just great work here.
Thank you, dude.
A good comment, dude. Thank you. And Scott, was there anything you wanted to say about your poem?
You know, I think that you hit it pretty well right off the bat, Pam. You know, to me, to a degree, it is about like society kind of devouring the individual to some degree. And so, you know, I think all three of you hit things that I was thinking in constructing it. And so, you know, like the apocalyptic comment as well, where it could be like that to the individual. So, you know, and just like locusts take things to the ground, you know. And so anyways, yeah, that was kind of the aim I think I had in writing it. So thank you guys for your comments.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you were inspired. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
The Swarm by Diane D. And you got SoundCloud.
All right. So here we go.
The Swarm by Diane D.
Ten thousand plagues swarmed earth, letting loose the locust floods that multiply like grasshoppers,
spreading evil in the multitudes. Whether you walk with the seal scorched onto your foreheads, you berate the walk and unfold. Servants of the star and snake. Among the serpents are vipers, which draw the locust swarms, seeping under the door cracks, with their children sleeping moan. Unknown to the masses hiding within a blue teen obliviousness, not noticing that water is blood, or there is darkness for 3 days. Some with boils all over the body, warning horrors of warts and lice, parades of a zombie apocalypse, chanting staccato, "The end is near." End poem.
Great read and write, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Scott, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, this is really powerful. I enjoyed this right from the beginning. I love the background music that she chose to, you know, just a eerie sound going along with it as it went. One particular stanza that stood out to me, among the serpents or vipers, which draw the locust swarms, seeping under the door cracks, wither children sleeping moan. So just, you know, a sense of the end that's coming to some degree, how it's seeping under the door cracks, and that withering children sleeping moan and all that. So it was really powerful. And then that last stanza kind of wrapping up the idea of the apocalypse, some with boils all over the body, warning horrors of warts and lice, parades of zombie apocalypse, Cotto, the end is near. So very powerful, right? Definitely very enjoyable, Diane.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It definitely has that feel of the end times. So excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, that last line kind of hits me up with the sort of those guys on the street corners in the big cities would see for the last 60 or 70 years proclaiming the end is near. They're unwashed, they're long-haired, long-bearded, with a sandwich sign proclaiming God is dead, but the end is near. That kind of hits on that note. It kind of hits off, the whole thing walks on a little darker note to the sort of, say, a Sodom and Gomorrah motif. Where the 10,000 plagues are just the beginning. The thoughts with the boils, the all over the body, kind of hits on the notes of bubonic plague, warning horrors with warts and lice. It hits on the notes where syphilis came to bear in the early in the Dark Ages, because that was once just a thing, just like a chicken pox, until we had that mini ice in the 500, 600, 700 AD, and then all of a sudden it morphed into the bigger disease. The servants of the star and snake, among the serpents are vipers. Now there's it's one thing having a snake, but the vipers are that angle of individual or breath of a serpent that leads to other things, the poisons that are driven. They draw the locust swarm, so there's a thought there of offering up the metaphor with the viper being that call forth the locusts, which are their followers, to seep under the crack, and the children withering. It kind of hits me with the thought of, hey, we've got this big thing now where all of a sudden it looks like grooming in school is the largest, most key to bring down a society with ease, because once you've got the children, you're walking into the next phase of existence with those very much under your command. So
I like
that. Would be
like that.
Oh, go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
I really like Rex's viper's take as it being individuals that kind of draw in the locust swarm. Very insightful idea there.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what I really liked about your comment, Rex, is that you brought up the idea at the end, how if you can learn to control the next generation before they become adults, you know, and then, I mean, your whole comment was great, but there was one particular other point that really stood out to me, and I am so sorry. I've lost it, but if it ever comes back to me, you'll be the first person I let know, okay? So... All right. So, oh my gosh. Your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, I thought this was another apocalyptic piece, but I thought this was very, very intense. There were quite some there were a lot of I wouldn't say gory is the right word, but grotesque overtones, and I think that's really I think that made it really powerful. That's the nature of the consumptive nature of the locust, the swarm, which is the title of consumption, consuming, that's what all of these creatures really are getting at, right? That's consuming. I feel that's what really these descriptors are trying to get at, something that's just so powerful and so dense and so raw. And I feel that this piece does a great job at really explicating that idea of something being worn away at in a really visceral way. And on such a large scale too, because it feels like the entire world is being eaten away at, because it's such an apocalyptic piece, you know? And, because the way it's written, it feels like Revelation, you know. So it's so neat. It's a great piece, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely, great comment. And yeah, you're right, it is apocalyptic, and I think that's a common theme when you think of a swarm of locusts destroying, because there's such a complete destruction. I really liked this all the way through. I did like the mention of the unfold servants of the star and snake. Among the serpents are vipers. You know, it's interesting. The interesting thing about snakes is, some societies consider that if you dream about a snake, for it to be a bad omen. And some, cults, I should say not societies, but cultures, consider it to actually be an omen of good luck if you dream about a snake. It's interesting, though, how you think differently when you see, like snake, you just think, oh, you know, cool, you know, a snake in the garden. But serpents and vipers are something dangerous, something that's going to destroy society with lies. And definitely some wonderful visceral imagery in here with the mention of boils and warts and lice. You really get the idea of people paying the consequences. So powerful dark rite, very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
The Swarm by Judith Stockley. I'm guessing I got that right.
Yeah, pretty close. All right. The Swarm. All right. There is a darkness I have perceived within the light, and it is commonplace among humankind. For many have fallen prey to its perils. One to whom love hath given abundance, so that he desireth nothing. Yet love giveth him not the ability to reap this abundance, but rather a foreigner. This is transience, and emptiness, and the darkness of the soul. Children, and live long, and his soul be filled with darkness, and also that he have no funeral. I proclaim that one unborn is better than he, for the one unborn arrives in transience and emptiness, and returneth in darkness, and his name shall not see light. Furthermore, he hath not seen the light, nor perceived any facet of creation. This one hath ultimate reconciliation unto the darkness. Yea, though he hath lived eons upon eons, yet he hath perceived neither goodness nor evil. Do not all go unto one destination, to the same destination. All the toil of humankind is for the body, and yet the desire to consume is never satisfied. Yea, humankind is a bottomless, ever desiring to be filled. For what hath the one with wisdom more than the foolish one? What hath the meek one that knoweth how to walk before the awakened one? Better is vision established than aimless yearning. This also is transience and emptiness and ultimate exasperation of the soul. For a sight fixed straight ahead is in keeping with the light, whereas a sight unhinged is loose and in keeping with the darkness. That which was already hath a name, and it is humankind. And it may not contest with that which hath more power than it. Seeing there be many things which increase attachment, how is humankind any better? For humankind is that which attacheth itself unto itself. None knoweth what is good for humankind in this life. And all the facets of this futile life which humankind spendeth as a whisper of the darkness, none can tell what shall come after humankind in the light. End poem.
All right. Wonderful reading right there, dude. I'm really glad you've been calling in to read your poetry. Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
All right. There is a bite and note to a touch of spirituality, but that is almost backhanded because of the source you've got as to humankind itself. There is that note of those who don't understand the darkness that walks in kind with the light can only walk within one arena. That's usually darkness, and that sets them up to a basically a kind of cursed existence, so to speak. They only see the darkness. There is that note of understanding that once you attain an angle where you understand both light and dark and the complexity that walks within both angles, and you can't have one without the other, then you can actually walk a singular path, maybe a simpler path, which kind of walks the middle road as opposed to walking totally on one side or totally on the other side, because once you walk on either side alone, then you don't get to see the other for what it is. And then your temperance is spoiled either by the light totally or by the dark totally. And the fact you hit on here, do not all go to the same destination. Again, yes. Simplicity is, hey, we are born to die, and yet we die when we are born. There's that notion of once we're let out of the amniotic fluid, there's a certain death in that moment because you're no longer breathing that of the womb, and you're entering into a new world where you are coming into light and birth, a new piece of the puzzle, so to speak, a new being. Yet, and you also hit on greed. There's too much of one against the other, no balance in between. And what else we got? None can tell what shall come after humankind and the light. And that kind of hits on the notion that maybe we're spending too much time in the darkness, as it were, and there is that notion of dark days we are surrounded in right now.
I like those. Really great observations, Rex.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Scott, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Scott?
I am. You are correct. So, yeah, this is a really deep poem, and definitely one of my favorite ones that I've had an opportunity to read of yours, dude. And I feel like I could benefit even more from reading it a couple more times. This is the first time I'm seeing it. So, but I agree with a lot of what Rex is saying, and I feel that what you're saying in your poem here is that, you know, in the light of our existence right now, we really can't see, you know, beyond it. And, you know, that we largely attach everything in existence somehow to ourselves. Like, we make everything about us. And if I'm at all touching on what you're saying, it's a very powerful right. And because I think it's largely true, and you know, I think it's the kind of poem that would be powerful to many people reading it. So I look forward to actually hearing some of your comments on the poem as well.
Absolutely, great observations there, Scott. Yeah, I have to agree that this is a powerful rite. I like that there's spirituality in this, but it's that idea of that light and darkness combine. And I think what particularly hits hard is, I proclaim that one unborn is better than he, for the one unborn arrived in transience and emptiness, and he turneth in darkness, and his name shall not see light. Furthermore, he hath not seen the light, nor perceived any facet of creation. There's almost this idea to me that once we see the light, we see light, we see creation, that the darkness becomes even more profound, even more painful. I like that you use the word transient. I like the word exhalation of the soul for a sight fixed straight ahead in keeping with the light, whereas a sight unhinged and loose in keeping with the darkness. It's just the whole idea of, I think, of getting lost. And I like that you use humankind more than once. And this isn't just an individual. It's a look at humankind and how they struggle through the darkness and how they struggle to come to terms with the balance between the light and the dark. So powerful and emotive, right? Very thought-provoking. Very well done. And, dude, did you want to say a little bit about your poem?
Yeah, so this is actually based off of Chapter 6 of, you know, how people say, you guys said this was, this had a spiritual undertone to it. This is based off of Chapter 6 of the Book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. This is kind of like my interpretation of it. And I actually wrote an entire 12 chapter poem based off the 12 chapters of Ecclesiastes that is pretty much called Everything Flows, and it's on All Poetry, and it's long, but it's pretty much like this stuff. It's the way that I look at this poem is like, it's like the consuming of eternal darkness of humankind. You know, the darkness within that is just like ever consuming, but like how we can transform ourselves into light eventually. And that's just the way that I look at this piece is like, because I have to look at it in light of all of the other chapters. So it's like a vignette almost.
Okay, cool. Cool. I like that. Well, thank you. Thank you. I don't know when I'll have time to read a 12 part or 12 chapter poem, but I do have to say kudos to you for taking that on. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. And what was that, Scott?
It's a good poem.
Thank
oh,
you
read it?
Yes,
it is.
No,
cool.
Not the whole thing. This portion of it, though, is really well done.
Oh, okay. Yes, definitely. All right. And Rex, what do we got next?
Grains and Dust by Poetic Creation. Droning sound. Drones are in the air. Hellfire missiles and sidewinders. Dark nightmares with a bit of flair. Two explosions, then boom. Cannonball eyes invited me inside. The left wing was the coal fuel that primed the seized engine. Taken over by a besieging swarm, bring forth the big guns and let not their armor advance any further. Underneath, a hailstorm of high caliber artillery. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like that artwork that Naomi put up for the prompt that she chose to write to. Really makes an impact here that his word choice and Scott, your thoughts.
Can you go to Dude real quick? Let me look at it a little closer.
Sure, no problem. All right.
Thank you.
Well, I'll just go ahead and do my comment. I like the use of bringing that he starts with the sound, droning sound. I have to say, sidewinders, another great choice of words, powerful, right? Two explosions and boom, cannonball eyes invited me inside. The left wing was the cold fuel that primed the seized engine. I feel like in its own dark way, it has almost a kind of sensuality, which I know sounds weird to say because it's not even marked sensual, but I feel like there's a dark sensuality, the idea of being taken in and completely absorbed by somebody, you know, within that second stanza especially. And let not their armor advance any further underneath a hailstorm of high caliber artillery. You know, I think, to me, and this is just my thoughts, is it feels like, and I was kind of talking about this earlier about how, you know, like the choice of using atomic bombs would destroy a whole world, and that's why, you know, most leaders are hesitant to use them. The underneath a hailstorm of high caliber artillery feels like the idea of fighting fire with fire. So it's interesting to me because I'm not quite sure about the first stanza, but the second stanza is almost more personal to me, like an individual's thoughts. And the third stanza feels more like more than one person being affected, like a destruction of a society. I really always appreciate that PC is wonderful with imagery and metaphors, and he always gives me a lot to think about in his poetry. So I just really appreciate that. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, that second stanza, that last line, the seized engine. There's a double thought in that. It's not just a seized engine. It's a seized engine, which is what you would call something like a trebuchet is a seized engine, something along that line. But this refers on the back end with hellfire missiles and sidewinders, those dark nightmares with a bit of flare, the newest angle of destruction, and that was filled. Two explosions, then boom, cannibal eyes. Cannibal eyes kind of hits you with sort of all of a sudden dawning of awareness, the eyes bulge, invited me inside the left wing with the coal field of time to see them. There's that angle of, all right, they've let the shit out of the bag, so to speak, and now it's full throttle and no going back. And then the back end of this is standing tall, taken over by the seizing swarm, bring forth the big guns. It kind of hits on that notion of their armor, the armor of God, so to speak, advance any further underneath a hailstorm of high caliber artillery. So the angle is, if you don't stand firm in the moment here, with that almost kind of deferential thought is the armor of God, with their armor, you will not stand ever again. It'll all be gone, because the angle is once that cold fuel has hit the fire, all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. The hellfire missile up top is that idea of hellfire and brimstone, so to speak. The actual thought behind that missile and naming it that way is because of what it brings forth.
I like those thoughts. I like that. Very cool. And Scott, do you feel ready to comment?
Sure. Yeah, I feel like there's some sort of a war reference here, but I'm having a hard time really putting it all together. And I think Rex was hitting on a lot of that. I think parts that kind of throw me a little bit with what I'm trying to come to grips with on it, you know, because, I mean, the first stanza does seem as if it's very much talking about warlike things, droning sound, drones are in the air. But then again, comparing that to locusts, like the destruction of locusts and stuff. And then moving into that second stanza, the part that kind of throws me is the left wing, whether that's referring to like Democrats and they've started a particular war. And so I'm kind of wondering if it isn't referring to a particular type of thing. Was the cold fuel that primed the seized engine? So in other words, there wasn't a problem, but then it was caused by the left wing. I don't know if I'm totally off base here, but that was partly what was throwing me as I was looking at it, trying to see if there would be something that, you know, and it kind of makes me think of maybe like the desert swarm kind of thing by a besieging swarm. And so anyways, that's kind of where, and then underneath the hailstorm of high caliber artillery, I'm sure any of us that watched the initial attack on Iraq, that describes it.
Yeah, the first one, Desert Storm?
Yes.
That was quite the show back in 91.
Yeah, and so, you know, I just kind of was trying to you know, make some sort of attachment to it. And when you're commenting, Rex, it's kind of hard for me to hear it. I hear parts of it, but you're kind of muffled out. And so
oh,
I'm not
sorry.
Sure. No, that's okay. I'm just saying.
Well,
you
mentioned left wing, whether it was Democrat. And I'm not so sure if the meaning there was Democrat or left in toto, the thought of communism, the thought of Nazism, the thought of walking down that totalitarian regime role where if you do not stand against it, all of a sudden it rolls over you.
Okay. That's another way to look at it as well. So that's why I was saying, for me, it was, questionable. That's why I wanted to kind of let, the one thing I will say with a lot of tonight's poems, it's hard to read them in one reading and give any kind of an accurate, analysis of it. I feel like I'm doing an injustice trying to comment on some of them.
Oh, you shouldn't feel that way, because some poems, they can walk in a number of avenues. And you know what tickles a lot of people when they write is when they get, instead of the same variation on the theme of a comment, when you get a continuous thought of this over this over this over this, and they sparkle with the thought, wow, I didn't think I could generate that much in differentiation and comment, which is
actually
really pleasing to the mind.
Actually, I enjoy that myself, Rex, so I agree with you that that's very possible that a poet would, love the idea that we're going on and on about it, so.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So Rex actually makes a really good point. I can tell you that Rex and I have been doing shows for a few years, and, people, they just appreciate comments. They appreciate people taking time to comment on their poetry and to share their thoughts. And I definitely appreciate the thoughts that you shared there, Scott. I think you had some, as you were commenting, you comment like how I do sometimes, where, you just talk as you think, which is, actually can be a good thing, because then it's like a raw and honest comment. But I know exactly how you feel, because you're right. We have had a lot of poetry tonight that deserves more than one read, for sure.
For you to be able to give an honest analysis of it, because it kind of makes me feel like I'm not doing justice to the poet when I don't have the time to look deeply enough into what they wrote to give them, an honest analysis of the poem itself. So anyways, that just was what came across my mind as I was struggling with this.
I get that. We get that. But yeah, definitely always, don't worry about your comment, because people like, as Rex said, people like different interpretations oftentimes. And dude, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a very a warlike poem. I thought a lot of fighting imagery, and I thought this was a cool piece, because it had a lot of
absolutely. You're right, there is definitely a strong sense of violence within the right. So great comment. And Rex, what do you have for us next?
The Looming Shadow by Cedar Chapman. And Scott, would you like to give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Okay. Looming Shadow by Cedar Chapman. How you lure me to your world to trudge along a river of tar as glass shards, stalagmites creep through charcoal soil. Stirred, cindered planks crackle from burning homes. Your locust plague burrows my mind, peeling scalded flesh from my bones. Each tiny bite warms my blood, tingling my skin with pleasure. Their buzzing, feeding frenzy brushes my face with God in a sea of ecstasy, absent of pain. Brimstone skies bleed into black mountains. Ember rain falls on my head. I bathe in your sooty cesspool, my arms stretched wide, begging you to course fire through my veins. I long to feel nothing but the feast of the locust cloud swarming in your glorious world. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. I have to say, I've been running across Cedar's poetry more and more, and I'm really becoming a big fan of the use of emotive imagery. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with the abstract metaphor that runs through this. It's really nice. That second line, to trudge along a river of tar, glass shards stalagmite, creaky charcoal soil. It's such a nice vision of darkness, not to mention the needle that's broken its way with the heroin. So this walks within that nice tone of, well, maybe not such a nice tone, addiction, because he hits on a couple of things. I bathe in your sooty cesspool, my arms stretched wide, begging you to course fire through my veins. I long to feel nothing but the feast of the locust cloud swarming in your glorious world. What a hell of a descriptive thought to being a heroin addict.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it does have that feeling, doesn't it? Especially in like, you know, brushes my face with God in a sea of ecstasy absent of pain. So great observations there, Rex. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's got some really powerful images. I was drawn to that same idea. I love the idea of the glass shard stalagmites. You know, I could picture being in a cave and seeing that growing up out of the ground and everything. I really like Rex's comment, though, as far as relative to it being like maybe a heroin addict or something else. I think that's really powerful in the context of what's being said here with the second stanza. Your locust plague burrows my mind, peeling scalded flesh from my bones, but then it turns into enjoyment. Each tiny bite warms my blood, so the bite being the needle stab, tingling my skin with pleasure. They're buzzing, feeding frenzy brushes my face with God in a sea of ecstasy, absent of pain. So that's a really powerful stanza there as well. It's a powerful poem, and definitely just really well put together, especially in the context of it being like a drug addict or something.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I really like this all the way through. I really, especially like the mention of the glass shards stalagmites and the idea of stepping on glass. I bathe in your sooty cesspool, my arms stretched wide, begging you to course fire through my veins. I long to feel nothing but the feast of the locust cloud swarming in your glorious world. There definitely is a feeling of addiction, and I'd probably have to agree that it would be something to do with heroin or a needle, but I do think, especially in that end, it works well with for any type of addiction, or even just the idea of how when you get your heart broken or, you know, someone betrays you and, you know, it hurts so bad emotionally that you wish you couldn't feel. Just powerful imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
We have Creepy by Andreas 68. And Duke, would you like to read that for us, please?
Oh, Dude had to go.
Well, that would be you then.
Well, all right. Creepy by Andreas 68. I sense they are there, skin crawling at the slightest sensation, as swarms cloud my inner sanctum, somewhere between locusts and earwigs, laying eggs into unprotected orifices. The mosquito's cousin, a blood-sucking, piercing sampler, inching its way into the veins of my beingness, tiny tendrils sensing weakness, creepy crawlers, slugs and worms, snakes and eels, wiggling and weaving into nightmares until sleep becomes elusive. Twilight bats hovering overhead, their fangs boring deep panic, reputation eliciting human fears of poisonous venom and death. Real or imagined, truth or tale, neither matters when haunting thoughts spill into the night. End poem. Oh my goodness, yeah, that was creepy. The good title for that one. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one seems to overall be about the fears of human beings in general. And yeah, it's got some really good allusions to a variety of things that people might fear, and the locusts and the earwigs, and moving on down, creepy crawlers, slugs and worms, snakes and eels, and yeah, it's got a lot of different images. Some things that I would just as soon not run into, and the things of nightmares. As I believe this is sort of referring to twilight bats hovering overhead and their fangs boring deep panic. Those are some great words and lines there. So, yeah, it's a nice poem that brings out that feel of uneasiness. Good job, Andreas.
Absolutely. And you're right. It's very much about those fears that we have. You know, whether they're real, or whether we imagine them. So, great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Scott's right. This does walk in that fear angle, but it also comes from that lizard mind. That little thing, the fight or flight mode, is that walks in the brain, and that comes also from the tens, the hundreds of thousands of years ago, walking back when we were at the bottom of the food chains and a lot of things. The thought of those large creatures, the mosquitoes, the blood sucking, the creepy crawlers, the slugs, the worms, the snakes, the eels, all of those things back then we knew nothing of. That could hurt us, kill us, and the only thing that kept everything, seemed to keep everything at bay, was when we finally came across the notion of fire to help illuminate and warm that arena that we spent in the caves, and that kept a lot of these things at bay. But that last stanza kind of hits it all right out of the park. Real or imagined, truth or tale, neither matters. When haunting thoughts spill into the night, there's that angle of once you get onto that role of thinking about the creepy crawlies, the spiders, the worms, it doesn't matter what it is, that which bothers you innately, all of a sudden, again, that lizard part of the brain reacts and tells you, oh, shit, this ain't right. It's like going to a movie, and you get that one image of something that you innately fear, and all of a sudden, it's brought forward to the forefront in your mind, and you go, oh, my God, no. Yes. You know it's not real because you're watching it on the screen, but then you go home and you think about it and you're bothered by it. It sticks with you, sticks in your craw.
Absolutely. And this just shows what a powerful thing the mind can be, like what a powerful thing that fear can be, that it can, you know, take over the mind. And I did like the way that this poem wrapped up with the idea that, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's truth or a tale, you know. And I like that a lot of this touches on the whole idea of those, what do they call it? Oh, shoot, I'm blanking out. What is it called? A suburban tale? Not suburban. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't remember. Oh, well. You know how, like, different cities and towns, like, will have their local legends?
Yes, the myth. Yes, there's Mothman. And there's the Jersey
right.
Devil. Who's this? There's the swamp thing down in Florida, or they call them the skunk ape. And
what are those called?
Bigfoot.
Urban legends.
Urban legends.
That's it.
But yes, those are great examples. But. Oh my gosh! That, like, he brings in the idea of the laying eggs into unprotected orifices, and that just makes me like squirm and just, you know, those heebie-jeebies run up and down the spine. And so, just an excellent write on those urban legend type fears that are played in the mind. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Clouds of Death by Beatnik. In Kenya, swarms the size of Manhattan loom, foretelling hunger, strife, and doom. From the Horn of Africa to the Middle East, they can't escape the marauding beast. Egyptian locusts across the Red Sea rain to invade and consume each plant and grain that feeds each man, woman, child, and domestic beast. The clouds of death gather for the feast. Inescapable are the hordes that deplete and devour each morsel of grain and wheat. Once the land is laid bare, warlords seek to scavenge what's there. They intercept aid from charities worldwide and don't care about the mothers and babies that die. They extort the public for financial gain. The poverty-stricken get nothing but pain. Some can afford a few meager meals. The militants consume whatever they feel. Death continues in a reality so cruel, whether you risk for your life or a cup of gruel. But from ancient times to the present, famines persist, each generation hoping the plagues will desist. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like this write by Beatnik. Wonderfully written, rhyming, good. I like that he did his research. You know, he put in his AN. As I researched locust swarms online, I found some stunning facts, like the potential size of a locust swarm, the distance they could fly nonstop, and the devastation they could leave in the wake. I also saw photos of a swarm in Egypt where a commercial truck was driving down the road in the middle of a cloud of locusts, thus the name of the poem. I also found out that scientists had discovered that locusts secrete a pheromone that attracts other locusts, causing them to swarm. I thought that was really cool. You know, I think this is, I mean, I don't think the AN necessarily needed to be read, but, you know, I wanted to because, you know, it just really showed that he did his research. I like that he took the prompt more literal, that he shows to us. You know, and yeah, you could probably interpret this as metaphors. It would work that way. But he really shows us how in certain parts of the world, when crops are destroyed, you know, and, you know, when the darkness of humanity and the struggle of life, I like this all the way through, but they intercept and from charities worldwide and don't care about the mother and babies that die. They exhort the public for financial gain. The poverty-stricken get nothing but pain. You know, and there's a dark reality to this, right? I mean, you really have to be so careful of what charities you use to give to causes that you believe in, because some of them are only looking out for themselves. And I think that's what those, to me, what those lines are saying. So an excellent look at the dark, the way people take advantage, you know, of people starving and having nothing of their own. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I really do like the idea that it is a literal interpretation of the impact of wokeness. And then, but I do like the metaphorical twist that you were just referring to, as human beings kind of being the scourge. Once there's relief on its way, people trying to take advantage of it for selfish reasons and, you know, allowing things to continue on that probably could be remedied. So, yeah, it's got its message within this beyond just the enlightening as to the impacts of a swarm of locusts.
Absolutely. Well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. Well, it kind of points out the notion of through their pouring, which leads into whoring, which leads into warring. I think Scott hit on that sort of the angle of there is a lot, I keep telling everybody all over, this planet is a secular system. It does things every locusts come and go over a number of years. There are cycles. The Earth walks in cycles. The Moon walks in cycles. The Sun walks in cycles. And so does Jupiter, which affects us immensely. So along with everything else, volcanoes. We are set on a timetable that works enormously to the advantage of the planet itself. It'll help renew itself by letting loose certain things at certain times. Bubonic plague came out of the Dark Ages and ravaged Europe, ravaged the world, and came back a couple more times. There are other things that have walked the earth the same way. It is a matter of fighting back, so to speak. When you get too set, comfortable, and you're taking too much, something comes along that smacks you upside the head and says, you are not the king. I hold a lot more within my soul than you can ever understand or bring growth to or know of. And I'll always bite back. And that's what the locusts are part of that process, as is the little parasites, the fleas, the bubonic plague fleas. They come and go. There are other things that go along with it. So you look at how before we had immense travel from ocean going, every civilization across the planet was situated singularly and unto themselves. I mean, look at when Europe came to America. Both Europe and America at that time both had syphilis. But in the Americas, syphilis was like chicken pox. The kids got it around puberty, had a couple of weeks of it, and it was gone. But the Europeans had already been through that cold streak, which moved syphilis into a new angle, which was deadly and dangerous. So when the commingling of both ends of that ended up depleting the population here, just like measles and smallpox and everything else that was current and going on in Europe. But once they started traveling, it spread to everywhere else and decimated population. That's how the Earth works.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. I have to say, there's just times I really love listening to you comment, Rex, and because I get to observe, you know, absorb knowledge, And that was definitely one of those moments that, you know, that it was one of those moments where you were commenting and I wanted to say, amen, brother. Amen. So.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoy listening to Rex too.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know what? You ought to come back a few more times. You haven't been so shabby yourself, my friend. And it's good to have someone else and your voice come on board.
I will tell you, I'm used to going to bed at 9 o'clock my time. It's 11:30 almost. I'm tired. So.
I get you.
Okay,
if you can do it now and then, it would be a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, we definitely understand that, but anytime you are awake and can't sleep and our show is on, definitely we would love to have you join us.
Yeah, it's enjoyable to do. I love looking at poetry.
Absolutely. And I'd like to say, make sure everyone puts out the contest put out by our, and topic boards put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, including Rex's contest for his Sunday show. Thank you, Rex, for being, as always, a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Scott and Dude for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. Thank you to Naomi for running the contest for the show. We truly appreciate you all, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Dude.
Good night, guys.